Our scripture today comes from the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it's written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "Again, it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. He said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. Here ends the reading for this day. Thanks be to God. My parents tell the story of when I was a young girl sitting in the back seat of the car. We were driving somewhere in town. I had been attending the Baptist daycare off of 50th and May Avenue, as both of my parents worked full-time during the week. One day from the back seat, I started reciting the Lord's Prayer in its entirety. They hadn't taught it to me, and we hadn't attended church since I was a baby. They were shocked that I knew it. I don't remember this moment in time, but I do remember praying that prayer every Sunday when I started attending church with my best friend in the second grade. The line that held the most imagery for me was, "And lead us not into temptation." I wondered and imagined how being led into temptation would appear. Did it look like wanting to steal the colorful stickers in my neighbor's desk at school? Did it look like following the crowd during recess and making fun of the boy who had no friends in class? Maybe it looked like running across the street in front of my house when I was outside alone, something my mother had explicitly told me not to do. Never in my wildest dreams would I have imagined that temptation could look like doing good things, which helped other people. On this fifth Sunday of Lent, we learn a new definition of what it means to be tempted. The dictionary defines temptation as a desire to do something, especially something wrong or unwise. Eric Elness, in his book, The Gifts of the Dark Wood, proposes another interpretation of what doing something unwise can look like. He suggests that often we are tempted to do good work that is not ours to do. When we spend our life, energy, and time doing good things that are not ours to do, it can leave us exhausted and worn out. Not only that, the good we're doing may be someone else's good to do. However, by our doing it, we prevent them from participating in what in fact may be their very calling and path. There are always good things that need to be done in the world. Doing these things actually helps other people and makes the world a better place. Sometimes we do them in our spare time, such as volunteering, and sometimes we do them professionally. However, when we're doing good work that is not ours to do, it can be hard to stop. Eric reflects, logic and reason will say, think of all the good work you're doing here. Think of all the people who rely on you. Think of your coworkers. If not them, think of your family. Ensuring that they have food to eat and a roof over their heads is a good thing. And what about your pension? Why not putting off doing what you really feel drawn to do for a few more years? When you retire, you can do anything you want. Of course, by the time many people retire, they are so used to doing what everyone else wants of them that they have lost all concept of who they are and what they want, or how to say no. So instead, they pick up a television remote in one hand and a golf club in the other and call it the good life. When we do the good work that is not ours to do, we don't have enough time and space in our life to find and enter the path that is ours to walk, the path which contains the good we were born to do. Jesus faced the same dilemma in the wilderness when he was tempted by the adversary. After 40 days and 40 nights of fasting, which is code language in the Bible for a really long time, Jesus was tempted in three ways. He was tempted to turn stones into bread, to perform the miracle of saving himself after jumping off a high building, and to rule the world and be in charge of all laws and governments. What good could Jesus do if he devoted his whole life to turning stones into bread? He'd be able to feed all the world's hungry people, that's what. What good could he do by performing miraculous feats day in and day out? He could heal many people and dazzle bystanders into following him and his way of life. What could he do if he had taken over ruling the world and all of its governments? He could prevent legislators from slashing the education budget, could prevent hate laws from going into effect, could make sure regulations were in place to protect our planet from being consumed and plundered as a throwaway commodity. He could protect us from presidential candidates who advocate for violence and use rhetoric reminiscent of Nazi Germany. However, none of these temptations is what we would usually think of as being tempted. No sex, drugs, or cheating on our diets. Unless you gave up carbs for Lent, and therefore turning stones into bread may very much be a temptation for you and for Oprah, if you've noticed her bread commercials on repeat every day. The question is, why would doing these good things be identified as temptations for Jesus? He does, in fact, do all of them at some point in his ministry. Jesus feeds the hungry. He impacts political equations, and he performs miracles. But according to Ellis, if Jesus had devoted his entire ministry to any one of these good works, it would have been a much smaller calling and path than the one which God had in mind for him. Jesus' wider mission was to live a life in communion with God, to model and teach others how to do so as well, to reveal the divinity inside humanity and bring all of us closer to following our true path. What if he'd spent all his energy doing the good of feeding the world's hungry, but never had the time to give his Sermon on the Mount, or to turn over the money changer's table in the temple, teaching us about protesting injustice? What if he never had time to wash feet or invite marginalized persons to the table? He would have missed the bigger boat. And this is how temptation gets us. We do the good which is not ours to do, and the world misses out on what we have been created to offer it. We burn ourselves out and lose out on the liquid joy that flows through us when we are living out our God-given calling. At my last church, there was a monthly Friday night family movie tradition. It was simple in concept. I just picked a kid-friendly movie, advertised and collected RSVPs of who was coming that night, ordered pizza and pop, arrived early to set the space, and stayed late to clean up. I did it every month and could see the relief it provided parents on that night, not having to worry about supper, receiving the opportunity to connect with other adults who have children the same age. It was good work indeed. But every month I would come home exhausted. The work was simple and good. But I didn't realize it wasn't my work to do until I was approached by a parent couple several years after I arrived. They asked if it would be okay if they helped out with family movie night. Of course, I replied. I would love for you to pick the movie out. Well, they said maybe we could also set the space and provide the cleanup. Amazing, I cried. And they added, we'd like to set up a themed activity table where the kids can make a craft or answer questions about the movie and then receive a gift bag when they leave. Go for it, I responded. I had no idea that my taking over family movie night was preventing them from doing something that they were called to do, something which gave them great joy and purpose and fulfillment. I had gotten the job done, but there was glitter glue and contagious joy involved when they picked the movies, set the space, and provided for the kids. Plus, I was no longer exhausted on Friday nights. Instead, I got to schedule middle school youth group on those evenings. Parents got to come and relax, elementary kids got to watch movies, and preteens got to hang out with Pastor Kayla. Being around teenagers and young adults is part of my calling. So I got to leave on Friday nights exuberated, fulfilled, and overflowing with joy. This may seem small scale, but I think that's the point. Our lives are filled with opportunities to do small pieces of good work. So why not do the pieces which we're drawn to magnetically? And what about this path that we keep hearing about? What is the true path we are called to travel? Where is it located and how do we get there? Elns tells his interpretation of how we, humankind, got off the path in the first place and why our path can be so hard to find along the way. Among Jewish and Christian lore, Satan has sometimes been understood as an angel who strayed from God's side and became so disconnected from source that he turned into humanity's adversary. The adversary came along humanity to guide them. Only because the adversary was no longer living in harmony with God, he could not see into the darkness any better than humans could. Unable to guide humans along their true path, he created broad, bright roadways and paved well-ordered sidewalks that were easy to follow. Yet when humans started following these well-ordered roads and sidewalks, their hearts could still sense that there were paths in the darkness that led to their true place in the world. Fear was the only thing that kept them from daring to step out of their familiar world and explore the woods. Humans yearning for their true path became increasingly unhappy, anxious, and belligerent. Wanting above all else to keep things decent and in order, the adversary set up taverns along the good and proper roads he had constructed. There, humans could drink their fill on cheap beer that would mimic the sensation of liquid joy, which comes from following one's true path, yet without being anywhere near it. Some of these taverns eventually took the form of churches and other houses of worship, where religious leaders served the high-octane beer of self-righteousness, which seemingly offered the highest of highs. Serving their special brew, they convinced their flocks that the dark wood was evil, and that if they did not renounce their yearning to explore the dark wood and grant their assent to a strict code of doctrine and dogma, they would be burned with fire for eternity. Further, the preachers promised their drunk followers that if they just stayed in line, they would be rewarded with fullness of life. There was no need to enter the darkness to search around for some path that will only get you lost. While this fullness of life felt pretty empty, The preachers promised their flocks that all they had to do was keep coming back to the tavern churches, and they would enter paradise after they died. God had a backup plan for those who had lost themselves in this way. God planted the gift of despair deep within their souls. Once despair set in, no amount of booze could make the despair disappear. With cheap beer no longer placating them and desperation setting in, many people would no longer be content to remain in the taverns. Finally, outside the taverns, they would soon find themselves on the edge of the dark wood, where they could sense something mysterious calling to them. Being desperate enough to follow any path but the one they were on, some would stumble half drunk into the darkness. At these moments, lightning would crackle across the sky, illuminating a path before them. Thunder would clap its hands, sending reverberations of peace and joy through their bodies, which they hadn't felt in years. There, within the dark sanctuary of the great unknown, they would discover themselves in the world's embrace. While the souls would never rid themselves of restlessness or yearning, the dark wood would evoke a sense of peace, joy, and lightness of being such as they had never experienced following the adversary's wide, brightly lit roads and paved, well-marked streets. The adversary's highways and byways might lead them to the next tavern, but the dark woods path would lead them home. Last Wednesday at our book study, we heard this story, and then we reflected on our own lives, when and where we have found ourselves on the bright and well-ordered sidewalks that were easy to follow in life. When and where we have been unhappy or anxious, but continued to attend the taverns or churches that promised fullness of life, yet left us feeling empty until eventually despair set in. When and where we have heard the mysterious calling to follow a new path, even though it traversed into and through the dark woods. When and where we felt the reverberations of peace and joy of following our true path home. Some that evening talked about the satisfaction and joy that the nursing vocation has had for their lives. The fulfillment of being a massage therapist, of painting walls and canvas, of fixing that which is broken, and of teaching music to others. If you were to take stock of your own life, what is it in your day or week that sends you reverberations of peace and joy? I remember a time I followed this archetypal pattern and path in my late teens and early 20s. The bright and well-ordered sidewalks for me was the strand of belief and faith that I had subscribed to hook, line, and sinker. I reveled in well-attended praise nights accompanied with glossy trifold brochures explaining step-by-step how to achieve eternal salvation. I loved being 100% assured of my salvation in the afterlife, but certain aspects of the faith began to trouble me, expressly that part about LGBT people being sick and sinful and shunned and excluded from everyone else. I continued with the faith, though the cognitive dissonance left me unhappy and anxious. Eventually, I hit a breaking point. The despair had welled up deep within my soul, and I could do it no longer. Fearful and angry, I told God, "If you are against gay people, then I am against you." And over time, I began to identify as atheist. Even though it was the scariest thing I've ever done, I let go of the baggage of judgment from my former faith, and I was relieved. However, I wrote poem after poem of being lonely in life without a supportive faith community. I felt myself breaking down. Then I realized there was another way one could break. You can allow yourself to break open. I began to hear a still, small, mysterious voice inviting me to visit with people and places that had formerly been off limits. People of other faiths and of no faith. People of different sexualities. Literature beyond Max Lucado and music beyond Third Day and Big Tent Revival. I walked out of Mardell's Christian Superstore and explored the shops on the Paseo. Along the way, I uncovered my true life's path and my personal mission statement. I didn't always know my path or my personal mission statement, but one day, about 3 years ago, I decided that in order for me to say yes to some things, I would have to say no to others. I knew that organizations and churches had mission statements, which helped them to sift through the requests that come to them. They check the requests against their organization's calling, their mission statement, to see if it's in line with what they are called to do. I knew a few people who had personal mission statements, and I wanted to develop mine as well. Through prayer and intentional contemplation, I began. First, I jotted down the things I'm passionate about in life, things that make me light up. Going deep, helping church communities, planting peace, recognizing and creating beauty, experiencing God. I asked those closest to me what they see my strengths to be, what they notice when I'm most fulfilled. I boiled it down to a short statement that made my heart sing, and I keep this personal mission statement at the forefront of my heart and my mind. It helps me when I'm tempted to do good that is not mine to do. My path and personal mission statement is to empower community through experiences of the divine to lead lives of deep meaning while cultivating health, peace, and beauty in our world. I don't know about you, but sometimes I do everything else except for what I should be doing. I keep busy doing the easier tasks in front of me, which become distractions. I think that's what doing the good that is not ours to do can be like. The tempter uses these things to keep us busy and distracted from our true path and calling. During the season of Lent, when so many give up things for 40 days, what would it look like to consider giving up the good things you do, which are not yours to do? There's more to the good life besides golf clubs and television remotes. We're not alone in being tempted away from the good life. Jesus faced these same temptations. He was almost distracted by doing good and necessary things like feeding the hungry, advocating for just laws, and healing the sick. However, unless these things are the good which you are called to do, they shouldn't take up the majority of your time and energy. Your energy and time is meant for those good things that fill you with liquid joy, those things which replenish your spirit and do not leave you exhausted, those glitter glue activity table ministries which flow from your heart. The adversary will try to keep you in taverns that promise fullness of life but leave you feeling empty and anxious. Recognize the despair that you feel within these times as a gift from God. An invitation to venture beyond whatever tavern situation you found yourself in, out into the dark sanctuary of the great unknown. God is waiting to show you your true life's path. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation. But if you are led into temptation, allow its gifts to be uncovered by connecting with God and learning to say no to a great many good things in order to say yes to the good which you are called to do in this lifetime. May it be so. Amen.